Hello and welcome to Fidelity Connects, a Fidelity Investments Canada podcast, connecting you to the world of investing and helping you stay ahead. Today on the show, we welcome dividend investor Don Newman. Don gives an update on the dividend landscape, noting that dividends are currently thriving in the economy and where he sees them heading in the next few months. Don notes stability in the economy has led to most companies being in good financial standing. Interest rates remain sticky, plus a number of expected rate cuts have reduced, leading to a more favorable market sentiment. Don suggests this has also led to a Goldilocks scenario, where the economy remains stable, inflation decreases slightly, and the stock market benefits. He adds historically low interest rates have punished savers, forcing them into riskier investments for higher returns. However, dividend stocks remain attractive, especially during rate cuts, as their yields remain stable or even increase over time. As rates decrease, dividend yields become comparatively more attractive than other investment options. Don says this trend is expected to continue, making dividend stocks a promising choice for investors. This podcast was recorded on April 9th, 2024.
Let's go to the rates discussion. It obviously fits with the dividend discussion when they're super, super high. It's sometimes a tricky case, and some companies did have to cut their dividends. Where are we now?
In terms of dividends, I think the economy has been good. Companies have gotten their balance sheets back in order. I think the majority of companies with a relatively stable economy and are in really good shape. And you know what I'm looking for is companies to continue to grow earnings and grow the dividends along with those earnings. So it's a pretty good environment for dividend growers.
Good. Okay. Well, so the market has adjusted. Certainly, we've seen it. Price in all kinds of cuts from the Fed. That was, you know, at the beginning of the year, that was certainly the story. Along with that goes maybe an economy not in a great spot. The market's been fixing that.
Yeah, I think the thing that's been really interesting to me is like at the end of last year, the market had decided that, you know, we were going to cut rates six times this year. And quite frankly, as a manager, of equities, I don't want to see the six rate cuts because it tells me there's probably something wrong with the economy. It also leads to a little bit of disappointment if rates don't actually get cut that much. So what's, I think, become a lot nicer at this point is the market has actually sort of adjusted and brought that back to where the Fed is saying, the U.S. Fed is saying, listen, we're probably going to cut rates about three times this year. The market's actually a little bit less than that. And if I think about that just from a broader equity point of view, that's sort of almost a Goldilocks scenario. You actually get the economy is doing okay, inflation comes down a little bit, and you can cut a couple times, which is actually stimulative for the economy and good for stocks.
Right.
And in terms of like dividend stocks in particular, that's where I think we talked about it in your intro, the relative attractiveness of dividends starts to really improve once you start seeing rate cuts for at least the last couple of years. And it's been really good for savers, but you've been able to go out and you can find a money market at 5%. You can find bonds that are actually giving you a relative yield. And for savers, that's wonderful because in the last 10 plus years, the Federal Reserve and the central banks around the world have essentially been punishing savers and giving them zero, and you had to reach out the risk curve. You've now been able to go and you can stuff your money in cash or bonds, and that's okay. But once you start cutting rates, what ends up happening is your money market fund, where it yields 5 this year, in a year or 2 years, maybe it's yielding 4, maybe it's yielding 3.5, who knows the exact number, but it's less attractive. And what's great about dividends is, to a certain extent, in the last year and a half, while rates have been going up, you had to compete against both bonds and money market funds. And so dividend yields went up a little bit. The valuations have come in a little bit. But once rates start getting cut, that yield you're getting on your dividend, it doesn't get cut, unlike a money market fund or the yield you get on some bonds. It actually stays the same and, in fact, grows. And so that's where the attractiveness of dividends, once rate cuts actually start, I think a lot of people will be saying, listen, I'm getting less yield on this, but hey, dividend stocks actually look pretty attractive. And not only are they not being cut, the dividend yields are actually going up. Right. And I think that's sort of, we're now in kind of line of sight for that actually to happen.
So let's talk about a lot of companies' balance sheets. I might lean towards sort of the story of commodities and materials in a second. Mm-hmm. That might fit with this.
Sure.
But just broadly speaking, companies having to get themselves through, get their balance sheets in order to be living with the cost of capital where it's been. The work has been done now. Is that fair? The valuations
mostly.
Are reflecting?
I think the nice thing about dividend companies is they're generally fairly stable. Now, the one thing that's been a little bit tough over the last couple of years is stability sometimes comes with companies that run a little bit higher leverage because you weather things easier, your earnings don't move around as much, so you dealt with a little higher leverage. Higher leverage has not been good for the last couple of years because interest rates finally went up. So a lot of companies were actually having to say, listen, debt's going to cost us more. Why don't we sort of get things back in order? So I think across the board, a lot of companies have got this sort of idea of, okay, it's time to bring down the leverage. Most of them have done it at this point and gotten into better shape and are able to deal with the higher rates. And then once rates start getting cut, it actually is sort of a tailwind to sort of expectations and earnings going forward. We use an example, and I think you and I were talking about it just before we went on, just like energy companies. They were over-levered going into a downturn. A lot of them got like really, really punished. A lot of them have come and said, you know what, we're going to run with a certain amount of debt and it's going to be way lower than it historically has. And a lot of them have actually gotten to that lower threshold of debt. And now they're saying, well, for tax purposes, we're not going to actually run any lower debt. So we still want to shield some taxes. But now we've got the chance that every dollar we make after CapEx is going to go back to shareholders. So it's going to go back through dividends, and we're going to increase those dividends. And then on top of that, we're actually going to do buybacks. And that's, I think, one of the reasons you've seen sort of energy as a commodity has benefited from supply this year. There's been a lot of supply disruptions, but it's also benefited in Canada from a lot of companies coming and saying, hey, we're now giving all the money back to shareholders, and this free cash flow yield that actually goes to, it's not going to debt, it's now going actually to the equity holders, is really attractive. And you've seen a lot of energy companies and other companies that are doing the same thing perform really well this year.
Okay, so let's go into the sectors a bit. Generally, dividend payers are bigger, more established firms, yep, as you've mentioned. Within the sectors themselves, how much does that affect how you're going to be looking at this? You're going to be taking a look at which sectors are benefiting in this.
Yeah, market. I mean, I tend to be a little more, there's a little more stability on the dividend fund, but I'm not adverse to if the story's good and our analysts like things and there's a little cyclicality to it. I'm fine investing in it. It won't be a huge portions of the fund, but if the valuation is there, the dividends are going to be there, the dividends are going to grow faster in other areas, I'm certainly willing to look at it. So I kind of look at things as sort of a broad brush of, sort of a diversified portfolio. I usually run somewhere between 60 to 90 names. And I grew up here. I've been with Fidelity, strangely, over 20 years now. I grew up as an analyst here. And so I work with the analyst and we go around all the different sectors and we sort of find like what's most attractive, what makes sense and what's growing dividends and where is the cash flow growing and, you know, how can we benefit and companies giving money back to us as well as, you know, growing their earnings over the long term.
And your universe, you can go anywhere.
Yep.
Give us a sense of sort of the overall positioning in terms of like regional.
Most of the time when I'm going outside Canada, it will be in areas where Canada is not particularly strong. So like financials and energy are fine in Canada generally, but if it's sort of like, if it happens to be sort of consumer or technology or healthcare, those areas where Canada is a little bit sort of lighter in companies, I'll tend to go and, you know, often it'll be focused in the US.
Right. Okay. It's really interesting to sort of get a sense of that. Let's talk about the difference between the funds. So okay. Dividend Plus,
yep.
How different it is to the dividend
sure.
fund.
Yeah. Dividend sort of the, I would say is kind of the core diversified dividend fund.
Yeah.
So it will have a sort of a broader range of sectors, in it and, probably sort of resembles, it's a more diversified fund. Dividend Plus, if I go back to sort of the history, 20 years ago, it used to be our income trust fund.
Yep.
And it is a little more sort of sector specific. It's a little more sort of infrastructure type investments. So there would be sort of more utilities, more real estate, some pipelines type things. It's very much, think of it more as sort of is a Very much an infrastructure type fund as opposed to a diversified dividend fund.
It's an interesting time for infrastructure right now too.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, infrastructure actually is sort of one of the themes I kind of think about right now is just basically the electrical infrastructure and the electrification of everything. And so we talk about sort of, you know, AI and how AI kind of infects, impacts the dividend space. And one of the ways is just, you know, I spend some time, you know, looking at utilities, which are interesting because it's the smallest part of the S&P 500 they've ever been. But fundamentals are probably the best they've been in 20 years because load demand is just going to go nuts. And so you think about AI, the amount of power AI sucks and the amount of power it will need through data centers. I think the stat is the next 5 or 6 years. The draw on the power grid in the U.S. will be the equivalent to like the last 20 years of total power grid demand. So it's electrification of basically everything. So utilities are all taking up their CapEx numbers by billions of dollars. And this is like long dated. They're going to probably grow a little bit faster than they historically have. But there's also other ways to think about playing it. There's the companies that actually do the engineering for this. There's the companies that do the construction. There are the companies that do sort of the parts and the services that go into all of this type thing. There's just this huge build out in an electrical grid. And one of the areas that's sort of really interesting, or that even the data centers and the AI guys are looking for, is actually nuclear. Because it's, if you're an AI, if you are trying to draw demand into your AI data center and run these chips, you need load that runs 24 hours a day, 52 weeks a year.
Which means not maybe solar or wind.
And solar or wind doesn't fall into that. So you need like consistent demand. But all these companies also want clean generation. So it's, you don't go and go to coal fire plants. So, I mean, one of nuclear, whether it's be companies that, utilities that have uncontracted nuclear that you know, Amazon's willing to pay a premium for. Companies that supply anywhere into the supply chain. The electrification of everything is just going to be huge. And it's not going to be something that's the next year. It's going to be something that's going to take 5, 10, could be multi-decades to look at. And that's an area I think is really interesting and could be interesting, especially for some of the dividend paying stocks.
Yeah, and growing dividends, obviously.
Yeah.
Growing their dividends. So this is a question which is great. It was sort of the income story and the options that investors have for income. And you mentioned cash.
Yep.
This is a question about also GICs.
Yep.
So GICs, money market funds, are they impacting the dividend yields? Yeah, bonds too.
So answer is absolutely. Over the last couple of years, especially 22, 23, as dividends, as yields really ramped up, you had competition. And you had competition for the first time in 10 years where, and it's wonderful for, as I said, savers have been punished for a decade and a half.
It's their time.
And you could go and buy money markets and talk about GICs or bonds, and they were a competing asset class. And this is why I think looking at the competing asset classes and the relatively attractiveness, dividends to a certain extent, stocks have been a little bit ignored. You could go and find a competing asset class. Two, you've got a sort of an AI narrative that has kind of pushed a lot of people out the risk curve into things that are kind of working and have these wonderful stories, but valuations have been pushed up. Although somewhat like 2000, when the internet was going on, a lot of dividend stocks got ignored. Mm-hmm. And you got really good dividends. And when the market was coming off, they were actually going on. Up. So the valuations on dividend stocks right now, because they've had to compete against competing asset classes and sort of other stocks that are fit the narrative a little bit better, are actually relatively attractive at this point. And the alternatives the person had mentioned will likely get at some point in the next 6 months, year, 2 years, less attractive, because as rates get cut, you're going to get less on a GIC, you're going to get less on a money market fund, your bonds will hopefully have appreciated, but you'll be able to reinvest at lower levels. The dividend is actually there. The dividend yields are good, and they're not getting cut, they're actually going to grow. And I think that's the big difference. And what people should, I always say, like, if you've got if sort of a 5% yield on money market, 5% bonds, that's still 5% 10 years from now. And in fact, it may not be, but the coupon you've got, if it's a 5% coupon, if you've got a 4% on a dividend stock, but it's growing at 7% a year over 10 years, at the end of 10 years, that's a 7 or 8% yield. And you're doing a heck of a lot better than just sitting in a bond that's giving you, 5% a year. So the growth is really important and matters. The compounding of capital through dividend stocks is a really great thing, and especially buying them when they're not expensive because they've had to compete against other asset classes.
I mean, one of the discussions maybe a year ago was you want to be growing through and also getting paid while inflation is sitting where it is, and inflation is sticky. It's coming down lots of areas, but where does that sit?
Discussion? It's for me, as an investment advisor, one of your top jobs you can do for your clients is protect the purchasing power of your capital. And I've been talking about this for years now, especially when inflation was zero, you kind of could go out and you don't have to worry about the income coming in. You didn't have to worry about growth in income quite as much because there was no hurdle rate you needed to get over. But if you've got a case of where every year your groceries are getting more expensive, your car payments are getting more expensive, mortgage rates have obviously got more expensive, bringing in that extra income that just offsets, you can sort of knock out inflation just with your dividend yield. And then on top of that, get growth in income and capital appreciation over time. It makes a really nice part of your core portfolio where you can get that sort of purchasing power protection.
Right. And so this is your moment. You're sitting here. There are those that will say, after that first quarter that we've seen, which has been remarkable for a lot of stocks, is it time for, I don't know if you want to call it a rotation into something else, but, make that case for us. Perhaps people have made a lot of money and they might want to just hold a little. Is there an argument
from my standpoint, the AI narrative may go on for a while. Yeah. Growth stocks are great. I just think you should always have a diversity in your portfolio. And the one thing that I can say is, the S&P 500 is, north of 20 times earnings right now. I look at a good dividend portfolio in my portfolio, it's about 14 times. And that's actually less or sort of cheaper than a long-term average for my portfolio. On top of that, yields are actually higher than you get for sort of a long-term average for a lot of stocks in my portfolio. So I think from a standpoint of feeling more comfortable about your sort of upside downside, looking at things that maybe haven't worked and for good reason, but will become more attractive as rates slowly come down, where you can see both earnings growth and valuation expansion, because your cost of capital should go down a little bit and valuations can expand, it's potentially a really good place to think about, I don't want to say rotating your money, but just having that portion where you feel a little more secure about the dividend, the yield that's coming on, it's keeping your purchasing power and it's growing over time and it's not overly expensive at that point where maybe there are some of the areas of the market that are.
Right. Fascinating. Yeah. So your current views, question here, Don, on the Canadian banks. So take us through the banks.
Big dividend. I think I've talked about it before. So Canadian banks usually trade somewhere between 8 and 12.5 times earnings. We got into this very strange scenario last fall where there's been two times over the last 20 years where the Canadian banks have actually hit book value, the financial crisis and the global pandemic.
Right.
And the economy was actually okay. And you can say it's maybe slow, but it's not, it's okay. And a couple of the Canadian banks actually touched book value. And it was just like, okay, things are going to slow down a little bit, but like your pricing in global financial crisis and global pandemic type of levels of valuations. And the idea was they hit 8 times, they've moved back to probably 10 times. And I think for Canadian banks, actually, the idea of getting 2-3 cuts is actually pretty good.
Right.
Because they don't want 6 cuts because it hurts net interest margin. You're going to get squeezed on what you're earning between sort of lending things out and what you're paying out to your customers. And the consumer, you don't want to see what the consumer looks like under 6 rate cuts because it means things are bad. So under a couple rate cuts, the consumer gets a little bit of help. and your net interest margins hold up. So I think the story for banks at this point, they've re-rated up relatively nicely, but they still a fair bit to go when the economy picks up. I think the economy will be okay. Earnings growth will be kind of tepid this year, but you're getting a really good yield. The balance sheets are in really good shape. The valuations are sort of average. When the next cycle starts, what you'll have is earnings will start to grow and the valuations will start to expand again. So I think this year is started off really well. I think you're going to, earnings will be okay, but you're just kind of waiting for that next cycle to start. And when the next cycle starts, you're going to get earnings growth and the multiples will expand from average to above average. And that's where you'll make your money over the next couple of years.
So you've mentioned that timing of a rate cut isn't necessarily the most important thing to figure out. It's that they're sort of they're in the offing, they're coming at some point. That said, for those trying to make decisions on when to perhaps look at exactly your strategy or load up here, is it important? I mean, should a rate cut make things move very quickly one way or the other? Is there importance of getting in now? Speak to that.
I think it's going to be one of those things where I think when the rate cuts actually start to happen, you will have a bunch of people who are sitting there and going, geez, I've got all this money that's just sitting there. It may be sitting in cash, or I've got an expiring GIC, or I've got bonds. Oh, I've made some money in bonds. And they're saying, well, where do I put that now? And I think as the rate cuts actually sort of work their way through, you get one rate cut, you get two rate cuts, you get three rate cuts, and says, hey, every month I'm getting less income here on my money market fund. This isn't good. Or my GIC expired, and geez, what do I do with it now? Because the rates the banks are offering aren't nearly as attractive. Well, why don't I go and find something where, you know, the yield is actually good and geez, it's growing. Well, this actually looks like a more attractive alternative. So I think as an alternative, when rates start getting cut and people start realizing their income is going down, as opposed to, hey, why don't I buy something where my rates are pretty good and they're actually going up? And I think that's where it happens. And it's not going to happen overnight. But I think just as it becomes more obvious that no one likes to get less income, more income is generally better.
Yes.
And you're at a point where we know rates have generally sort of probably peaked out. It's just a case of, you know, are they going to cut 1, 2, 3 times? And I'm not exactly sure. I'm not a bond manager, but the path of
They're
direction.
They're not 100% sure
yeah.
either.
Yeah. The path of direction is more likely down than up, and that makes the dividend space look much more attractive.
So this is a question about vol.
Yep.
And volatility, obviously, in both directions.
Yep.
But this would be a less volatile approach. So if those who are concerned about something either rocketing too high and then falling or whatever, you come in a little bit.
Yeah, like generally sort of my dividend fund over the years, one of the nice hallmarks of it has been there's been sort of, it's beaten the market over time, but with a lot less volatility. And dividend stocks in general are nice vehicles for that because you've got a stable yield. You've got companies that have been around for a long time. They may not grow as fast as some portion of the market, but over time, you sort of that yield grows, you bring in the dividend, the earnings continue to grow, and then the valuations are pretty reasonable at this point. And it's nice to see.
How reasonable at this point?
Yeah, well, I mentioned, like, I think my fund's about 14 times earnings.
Yeah,
longer term, like, and the market's well, in the U.S. market's well over 20.
Yeah.
Longer term, I mean, I think there's been times when, you know, if my fund is 15 or 16, that's kind of normal. So 14 times after we've had this huge market run just tells you that a lot of dividend stocks have kind of been ignored and are actually relatively cheap versus the market at this point with good yields. I think sort of if you're looking for a little bit less volatility, lower valuations tend to sort of help sort of absorb a little more volatility because there's not as much room for things to go down. And if things continue to be okay, I think with some rate cut or two, things valuation can actually expand.
Yeah. Let's dig into the sectors just a little bit more with some time left. So
sure.
You've mentioned utilities. The AI story also fits very nicely with all of that, and even the idea of nuclear. Within utilities, within sort of how things move and our data and so on, telcos fit into that as well.
Yep.
They've had a rough go. But do they stand to sort of come into that breadth story of coming back on?
At this point, I tend to prefer utilities over telcos because there's a definite electricity grid demand story there. Right. And as I said, it's not going to move the dial massively. It's billions of dollars of CapEx, but it moves the dial sort of between 5% growers to maybe 7 or 8% growers. You get a 4% dividend yield, but you get a lower volatility, kind of 11% return. And then you try to take some of the other portfolio and you find it in financials and some energy and some really good industrials has been a really good story for the last year, whether it be sort of, rails and improving, sort of an improving economy, anything to do with the electrical grid that actually goes in there where earnings go up a lot. Just my idea is just find a diversified portfolio where things are getting better. Our analysts like the stories, and we can put money to work.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, I love that. You mentioned buybacks. You mentioned how it fits into the overall story. There are those that will say buybacks have sort of come in to replace dividends a little bit. What say you?
So what I always tell the companies that are in or that are dividend payers is like, here's what I would like you to do.
Yeah.
Your dividend needs to be safe. So no matter what, tell me what your downside economic scenario is, run that through your models and tell me that, and we'll do the same thing, that your payout ratio is reasonable, that your balance sheet's okay, and you can continue to pay the dividend no matter what's going on. If that's the case and your payout ratio is reasonable and you grow your earnings, say 10% next year, increase the dividend by 10%. That's fantastic. If you start generating, you're a little more cyclical and things move sort of up and down a little bit more, and you're having a really good year, the economy's on fire, your sales are on fire, buybacks are great. Fine, you give me some buybacks. Give me the stable dividend that's growing sort of with earnings over time. Excess cash flow that you want to sort of use, and you feel like you don't want your balance sheet getting too full of cash, give them back to me in buybacks. Lower the share count, grow your earnings per share because you're buying back shares, and let's grow the value of your firm. But let's do it through a combination of nice and growing dividends and some buybacks on top. But the buybacks to me sort of come after you've made sure the dividend is safe and growing. And it's sort of the extra juice to the earnings per share story.
Right.
And that should increase the value of stocks over time.
And a little bit on REITs, probably those that are not office, because we know the story there. But but beyond that, how do you take a look at REITs? Where do they fit?
Sort of stability, rates being cut should actually be good for real estate, because a lot of these companies, as I mentioned, and REITs are a perfect example, have extra leverage. So I think if you're a CEO of a real estate investment trust right now, you are sort of counting the days until sort of the rate cuts. But there are certain areas of real estate that are not office. Industrial has been just fine. Frankly, data center has been great. People all the people in there. I own a couple of the data center REITs. There's some stuff in healthcare that's been fine. There's some stuff in retail that's been fine. There's a lot of stories out there that are not office, and I think the REIT sector has kind of been painted by the oversupply in office, people working from home, geez, this is too much leverage. But there's a lot of stories out there where actually demand is good. Cap rates have moved up, so you're getting much better value for your money, and you're sort of growing with a reasonable dividend on top of that. So the REIT space is good. You just have to make sure you're filtering through the stories and know where the jurisdictions and what subsector you're in.
So what's the biggest story for a dividend fund right now? We've gone through the sectors, we've gone through sort of the rate story.
Yep.
I mean, is it rates? Is that the biggest story that...
Yeah, I think if from my standpoint, it's just relative attractiveness of assets. And I think because you've had to compete against other classes that have been yielding more, the dividends have had to move up, the valuations have moved down, and you're in some cases getting to buy assets at the same prices you were, like in 2019, where the rest of the market is nowhere close. So to me, it's just relative attractiveness of the asset class with the perspective catalyst that rates actually get cut and make the other catalyst categories you're competing against less attractive, therefore making dividends more attractive, and you're finally kind of in line of sight of that actually happening. So valuation is good, dividends yields are good, and other asset classes may become less attractive. And I think that's the pitch for dividend funds over the next year.
Pleasure to speak with you as always, Don Newman. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Pamela. My pleasure too.
Thanks for listening to the Fidelity Connects podcast. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to Fidelity Connects on your podcast platform of choice. And if you like what you're hearing, leave a review or a 5-star rating. Fidelity Mutual Funds and ETFs are available by working with a financial advisor or through an online brokerage account. Visit fidelity.ca/how-to-buy for more information. While visiting fidelity.ca, you can also find information on future live webcasts. And don't forget to follow Fidelity Canada on Twitter and LinkedIn. Thanks again. See you next time. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of Fidelity Investments Canada, ULC, or its affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice. It is not an offer to sell or buy or endorsement, recommendation, or sponsorship of any entity or security cited. Read a fund's prospectus before investing. Funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Fees, expenses, and commissions are all associated with fund investments.